Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
It's that time of the week again. It's the Brad and Body Podcast. Really looking forward to this one. How are you, buddy?
I'm extremely good, and this one's going to be very interesting in the light of recent circumstances. But I'll let you do the intro, and I'll go have a nap now and a coffee, because I'll be back in about a quarter of an hour when this intro's finished.
I think you might need to, because this introduction is going to take a while. When you think of women's basketball and basketball in general, there is a number of names that come to mind, but today's guest, well, yeah, that's one of them. Born in Melbourne, Australia, played for four NBL clubs, Bulleen, Nunawading, Perth and Sydney. And then on the onset of the WNBL in 1997, was selected for the Phoenix Mercury. Her number 7 jersey became the first to be retired by that club and only the second to be retired in the WNBA. She is an NBA All-Star in 1999. And when you think of the Australian Opals team, this name comes top of mind. 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics, she helped Australia's national women's team become the first ever to win an Olympic medal when they got bronze. 4 years later at Sydney, they got one better at silver. It got a silver, and in 1988, got a bronze at the World Championships as well. After finishing her career in basketball, she had a number of assistant coaching roles, including the Mercury, as we spoke about in the WNBA, and at the South Dragons with the great Brian Gorgian. It is well known through the basketball world that this lady has a fantastic brain for basketball, and while she's becoming a fantastic coach. To finish off, she was the Women's International Player of the Year in 1994 and 96. She received the Australian Sports Medal in 2000, inducted in the Sports Australian Hall of Fame in 2003, and in 2008 was elected to the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in Knoxville, Tennessee, and 2016 FIBA Hall of Fame. She is a member of the Order of Australia in 2018, and which for her significant service to basketball as a commentator and the national and international level, and the Olympic athlete as a mentor for women in sport. Long-time listener. She loves us and we love her. I am, of course, talking to none other than the great Timsy, Michelle Timms. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yeah, well, we want to find out everything about you, Michelle, and then we want to get to the Opals. So we want to start right back at how basketball became a factor in your life. How did you come across it? Was it at school? Was it, you had friends that played? How did you get into the sport?
Look, I think it was one of the major sports at my primary school, to be honest, and couple that with coming from a big family with 9 kids, it was one of those things you could just stick a backboard up in the backyard and we'd all be occupied, you know. But definitely remember it being the major sport at school. And in my area, which was the Manningham Municipality, everybody wanted to wear one of those blue and gold warm-up tops that meant you played rep ball for Bulleen. So,
right.
Yeah. Started way back in grade 2, I think, and I wasn't old enough to start. So I trained for a year with the older group and started when I was old enough at the ripe old age of 7. Nowadays, 7's too old to start.
Yeah,
you missed the boat if you start at 7. You've got to start at 5 now.
Yes, and that's also the same for gymnastics too. Sorry, you're too old. But I first saw you in, I think it was 1984 at the Australian Club Championships. I was coaching Sturt, you were playing for Bulleen, and we came and scouted your game that you were playing, so you know, in preparation for the next day, and I was just blown away by you. That was the first time I'd ever seen you. It was all this legs and arms and fury and speed and stuff happening all over the floor. I'm just sitting there with my assistant coach going, there's no way we're stopping this kid. She's going to kill us by herself. So how long did you stay with Bulleen before you had your association with Tom that took you out of that program?
Oh, look, I tell you, my memory, let's just be straight up. I've got a terrible long-term memory. Let me think, though. It was I played all my juniors at Bulleen. It wasn't until seniors that I went across. So I'm thinking it was under 20. So it was actually 1984 when I'm pretty sure it was 84. And Tom rang and asked if I'd be interested and chatted with my parents and that. So way back then, or was it after 84? Yeah.
Well, and so that was career changing for you, wasn't it? Because this is a coach that immediately believed in you, could see what your potential was. And
it was. It was absolutely career changing for me. I went from being like the third point guard at Bulleen and to getting a call from the coach. I think his team won it the year before, and they had Marissa Rowe at the point, and they they were like just fantastic. And here's the coach ringing asking if I wanted to come across and be the starting point guard. And I'm like, are you sure? You know, you sure you got the right number? But yeah, I mean, yeah, it was fantastic. And then, you know, being surrounded by just those unbelievable players in Robin Maher, Karen Blitzov, Palmer, Sharon Deakin, you know, at the same time I joined, after I signed, they signed Shelley Gorman for the same season. So, you know, we were so lucky because we got fast tracked so quickly with that experience around us. And then you, on top of that, have, you know, the best coach of all time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excellent.
I wanted to ask Timsy, because I remember watching you as I was growing up, and you were in Sydney then and playing for the Flames. And I remember coming to a couple of those games, and it was an absolute sellout watching you guys win grand finals and stuff. You played in some amazing teams. Is there one that stands out from another? Because you just won so many titles. How do you put that down to one? But do you?
Look, to be honest, I don't think I won any in my time in Sydney, but Nana Wadding was definitely – that whole era with Nana Wadding was super special because we became such tight friends, you know, and I think that's a sign of a champion team is one that you want to catch up with in 20, 30 years' time and sit down and have dinner with. And so if we're talking WNBL, I think it's hard to name one championship, but – the other one that was really special was because it had never been done before, was in Perth. Yeah. They won their one and only championship, and you know, Tom Maher was coaching at that time too. But that was super special because the championship had never come to Western Australia.
Yeah. There's plenty there now with the Wildcats.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yeah. When you were with Nana Wadding, was I right that would be a situation where you're working and playing? Like you've got a job and doing that? When did it turn professional is what I really want to get to and how that changed?
You know, it's funny. I was telling this story to a young one of my under 12 kids came over to my house to interview me for a school assignment last week. And I was telling her, she asked me the same question, and I was explaining how back in the day when I played with Nana Wadding and we had a very famous sponsor called Theo Costa Bikinis. And back then none of us got paid, but Theo would give us a few of us $2,000 to play the season. So that was sort of the money that we were talking about back in the Nana Wadding days for the season. But then when Perth called me to come over there, that was sort of semi-professional in that I still worked. I had to work at the gym at the West Australian Institute of Sport. They had a gym. So I worked there and I worked at the pub, but the money was definitely, I think I was on $30,000 to go over to Perth. So that was the first time that I really had an income from the sport, I guess.
What about when you went to Germany? How did that come about?
Well, I was working back with Basketball Victoria back then, and actually, you know, Boddy, it wasn't a lot of money that they offered me. That was after the 88 Olympics, and I was really lucky, and I distinctly remember sitting in a cafe in Seoul, Korea at the Olympics with Robin Maher just towards the end of it, and we're talking, you know, you set dreams when you're young, and I had a dream of representing Australia and tick that box, and I had a dream of going to an Olympics, and here I was sitting there and got to tick that box, and we started chatting about what next, you know, and obviously it was to win a medal, a chance is not another 4 years away, which had proved longer, in fact. But and then it was like, you know what, I'd love to play professionally overseas. And at that time, none of us had any idea how to do that. No one had agents. No, you know, we just knew that Italy had the strongest league in Europe and all the great, you know, the great players went there. Anyway, that was just a conversation that we had over coffee. And then I got back to Australia and out of the blue, Lorraine Landon rang one night and said, look, Michelle, a team from Germany, SG München, they've just called me and they want to know if you might be interested in going over there and playing for their club team. And I thought, yeah, I'd love an experience like that. So that's how that all came about. And in fact, I don't know that they specifically asked me. I think they asked Lorraine and just said, look, we're after a guard. Can you recommend anyone? Right. Unfortunately, she recommended me. So that was super lucky. And that's how my European time started.
Right. So it wasn't anything really lucrative. It was more the life experience of, all right, I'm going to go play in
Europe
for a while.
No, yeah. It was the life experience. I think I made less than what I did for the year at Basketball Victoria, but it was the experience, and it was definitely on my bucket list that I wanted to do at that time. And in fact, Body, I spent my first, I was got over there, and I was super homesick. You know, they put me in at this in this beautiful, oh, it was magnificent, in the Palatzzentrum, the centre of Munich, in this beautiful big, you know, apartment that overlooked the city centre, and it was magical. But I was so homesick. I spent I got my month's pay in advance, and I spent it on the phone, like changing it into coins and ringing home and crying to my mum and dad, saying, "Oh, I want to come home. I can't," you know. And they're like, you know, very strong in the fact that I'd made a commitment and I needed to stay there. And you know, so it was hard love, but it was exactly what I needed, because I did get through and I made friends and I had some wonderful years in Germany.
I'm just picturing that 12-year-old that came to your house just asking some questions, going, "Hang on, you just didn't. Why didn't you just use your mobile phone? Why did you have to change it to coins?" Michelle, after that, you then obviously illustrious career at the Olympics. I'm trying to pick your brain and working. When did it change where it's like, okay, we're okay at basketball, to now we're dominating at the international scene? Talk to us where that came from.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess, you know what? People forget in 1988, we came fourth, which is a pretty big effort, and we were one shot away of, you know, finishing in it, you know, with a medal. So, but I think it was the Tom Maher era when he got appointed as coach, and, you know, a couple of years later, it's the World Championships, and I think that was a real defining moment where just in 18 months we'd turned the program around, and these slew of athletes just, you know, landed, like your Trish Ballums, and you know, and I think it was from that belief in at the World Championships in Australia that great things came. I mean, we faced a lot of adversity then, and you know, we nearly didn't get out of the rounds in Adelaide, as Body, you would remember. It came down to a game. It was a must-win game against Italy, and we had to win by 15 or 17. But I think that really it instilled something in us that we started really believing in ourselves and thought, look, we fit on this stage. Like we're here to stay. And things just grew and grew. And then we started getting these amazing athletes involved in the national team, and, you know, and the rest is history. But I think it was back then, and definitely 96, that first medal we won, the bronze medal at Atlanta. It was, you know, but I think Tom Maher definitely had a lot to do with it. Instilling that belief and having us all buy into the program and what it meant to be an Opal, you know, who we are, what our style of game is going to be, you know, and it all went from there.
Absolutely agree. And I think he also did some clever things like played lots of games against China at that stage, or earlier. We had a problem with China and Chiang Kai-shek, and they used to knock us off fairly regularly. But by playing them so much more often than you had in the past, like you went over there and they came over here on tours, you basically took away whatever mystique they might have had, and they were just another team. And once we got them, boy, did we started killing them then. Once we had them, it was like they were in our back pocket, which was sort of, again, a really smart strategy on Tom's part to sort of work that out, that this is the team and the reason that's going to cause us problems. We've got to get used to them. I think it was terrific. When you first broke in there, it was Robbie Cadee coaching, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So who was the point guard at that time? Were you automatically like starting or –
Oh, gosh, no. Yep. I was a long way down the line. Jenny Cheeseman was there. Oh, gosh, I can't remember who. I know that time, I think I made it the first time in 86. Would that be right? Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
And then the year later, Sandy and Shelley made it. And Sandy played one and two. I can't remember who that other point guard was, though. Isn't it? So I told you, I've got a shocking memory.
Yeah, but you're well-served. You're well-served in that area. So for you to really make it your own, because it became...
Well, it was, you know, like, I remember being on a tournament in Russia and saying to Robin Maher, gosh, I'm never going to make this team. It was just a tour. It wasn't a team. It was the tour before the selection. And it was a few tours before the selection. I remember having a chat with Robin, and it was at that point where it was like, you know what, this team has this and this and this, but what they don't have is actually, that's not true, because Cheeseman was a good defender, but I decided to focus on trying to be the best defender I could be, you know, not worry about scoring or anything like that, but get on there, take care of the ball, get the ball to the people who need it, and really try and be, a really tough defender.
Michelle, I just want to ask you something, because when you were talking about coaching, there's something that I remember when I was a player. You play under so many different coaches, and sometimes you learn stuff from coaches that weren't so good, what you don't want to do when you are a coach, but then you've got other things that you learn from fantastic coaches that you want to take on. Talk to me how the fact that you've said greatest coach, Tom, I'm sure there's other coaches as well. Is that where you learn your trade to be a coach?
I would say, yeah, look, I was really fortunate, because as a professional, I got coached by a lot of coaches overseas and everywhere. And I think the thing I learned was that there's not one right way or wrong way. It's what suits you the best. Like, some of the stuff that I got taught when I first went overseas, played in Italy especially, it was like, what the heck are they trying to teach me here? This is ridiculous. And I was really pig-headed about changing my way. But it's like, and then as I matured as a player, it's like, no, well, there's not just one way. That's their philosophy. And so I've got to buy into this, you know. But then through that experience, I got to see what I thought was the best philosophy going, and for me it was, you know, it was very much Tom Marr's philosophy on which way you want to force defensively, what you want to do on ball, you know, like all the different little things. And then of course I went away and worked with Tom for many years as an assistant coach, so he, most of my stuff is Tom's beliefs and Tom's philosophy, with a sprinkle of other coaches along the way that I thought, oh yeah, that looks good, I could run with that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, he did say that it was you and Robin Maher that made him look good as a coach when we had him on. So it's good that it works the other way.
I was the worst person you could have. Robin Maher tells stories how I'd be in timeouts and I was just exhausted because I'd play at a fairly high clip. And
yes,
my timeouts were a time to rest and recover. It wasn't about listening. And so I'd go, which is very not very good when you're a point guard. And so I was renowned for getting up out of that timeout, having one last big swig of drink, and then going to the closest person, which was usually Shelley Gorman or Rob Ma. What did he say? What are we doing?
I've coached players like that. I've coached players like that. You watch them walk in and they're muttering to a couple of, what are we doing? Are we changing the defense? What are we doing? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really lucky because I got to play with some geniuses. Like Robin Ma, honestly, the smartest player I've ever played with. And I even played with Michelle Cleary, another genius of the game, and Christy Harawa. So I was really lucky to play with an absolute thinkers of the game. And I'll throw Shelley Gorman in there too. She was really clever, you know. So they helped me look good, that's for sure.
Can I ask a quick question? Am I hearing Shelley Gorman may be coming on assistant coaching in the WNBL?
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a little
rumour going on around there. Nothing confirmed, though. I just wanted to know if you knew that.
I'm presuming it's with Shane Heal then.
Well, that's what I'm hearing.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
But I don't know how true that is.
Ish, I tell you what, she'd get those girls in shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I want to ask you one more thing about your playing career before we sort of start talking about the Opals and what we think their chances are and the recent events. How highly do you rate? I mean, you've had so many accolades during your career, Michelle, and all deserved. But how highly do you rate the Phoenix Mercury retiring your number, given that, you know, at the time that you were playing there, your number 7 uniform was the most popular thing being bought by kids. And they had Kevin Johnson playing there at that time, and I think Charles Barkley has either just been there or was just coming. Where do you rank that? Is that sort of rank anywhere, or is that just another nice thing that happened along the journey and let's move on?
Well, you know what, to be honest, that was kind of embarrassing because I didn't think I was worthy of it, you know, and in fact, I probably felt even more so when they rang me and asked if they could unretire it, to give it to some rookie.
We've run out of numbers. We need that 7.
And we had that 7 back. And then I straight away talked to Penny Taylor because then I thought, oh, if this kid's that good, I guess. But, geez, sort of hurts my heart a little bit, you know, even though I kind of deep down felt I shouldn't have had it retired anyway. And then Penny and Diana Taurasi just went to town saying, that's, you know, that's not happened on our land and all this. So anyway, it's still up there. But, no, look, that was a huge honour. But I mean, Jennifer Gillen was playing, had played for him, you know, as well. And so there was, you know, she's one of the best players of all time in the W, ever wear a Phoenix Mercury top, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was. Yeah, so I don't know how that rates, especially with what unfolded after, but I kind of felt like that one wasn't worthy of it, especially seeing though the only other player in the whole WNBA that had ever had their jersey retired prior to me was Kim Perrott, who unfortunately passed away and she played with the famous Houston team, you know. So I don't know how it fits with me, to be honest, body after right. I got that call.
Yeah, that's why I was sort of curious as to, you know, because it's a long way away and it's like not something that you're really connected to. So I just sort of wondered where that fit. But now we want to get to the green and gold because everybody knows that if, you know, we cut you on one arm, you're going to bleed green. If we cut the other arm, you're going to bleed gold. So the Opals, the way this campaign is shaping up, and we'll address Liz Cambage's situation in a sec, but the way they played against the USA, I thought it was phenomenal and just so encouraging because I've actually been looking at this campaign and the teams that are coming up potentially, you know, outside the group, there's quite a number of real high quality teams. You know, we've had our issues with Japan recently and, you know, Belgium's coming up and it's there's Spain, there's France, there's USA. So that performance really instilled me with a lot of confidence. Talk to me about what it did for you in terms of how you think they'll go.
Well, my friend, I'm right there with you because, to be honest, I've been very vocal that prior to the Liz Cambage incident, that without Liz, if we don't have Liz, we're just the also-ran team that would be between 4 and 8, you know, right. Like we'll be in that mix sort of thing. With Liz, she makes us the medal contender. But what I saw the other night, and on the back of Liz's departure, gave me so much hope that and so much faith that I think we, you know, if we're able to replicate that through the course of the Olympic campaign, which is 6 games to the Olympic gold, we're in with a great shot of medaling. And I think that'd be fabulous considering, A, we've hardly been together, and B, you've lost your centrepiece. But and it's a huge, but you know what? That's what being an Opal's all about, isn't it? We've been sprouting it for years, being able to handle adversity. And this is a huge piece of adversity that was thrown at them. And I thought they came out, and I'm just hoping they came out and were brilliant. Offensively, they found a way in the second half. They were too reliant on the 3-point line, I thought, in the first half. And and then they made great adjustments. I thought Sandy coached brilliantly.
Yep.
And and our players, that was a brand of basketball I don't remember seeing in the Opals for quite some time. Like, you know, I don't remember. Do you remember them playing that intensity, that fast, those cuts, those slashes?
And, I think,
I just was so impressed with that in the last 4 years. I don't know, I've seen that.
Well, if you go back to 2014, just ahead of the World Cup when Brendan Joyce was coaching, I think Liz got injured a week out from the tournament, and they had to make repairs on the run. I think they flew that girl out from Bendigo, Gabe Richards, I think, was the one they brought in, and they played off for bronze, and it was almost like everybody rallied around, all right, we're not going to be as good as what we could be with our best player out, but we're going to still be as good as we possibly can be. And I thought that tournament, we played the sort of basketball that we saw them play against USA. So question I got for you now is, would you bother trying to bring in an extra person? Like, would you be looking around now?
Absolutely.
You would?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Oh, come on. It's an Olympic experience.
Yep.
Those things are gold in a player's development, you know? Like, I mean, my understanding is they're trying to, but I guess there's a lot of red tape that has to be, you know, and paperwork and that. So I'm praying for whoever that fortunate individual is that they get over there and they get to experience.
Who would you take, Michelle?
You couldn't go wrong, but I would think they're probably going to take a big, aren't they? But you couldn't go wrong if you took a Nicholson or a Heel or, you know, or I guess Bitzars is the other one. I mean, who's the fourth who's the reserve? Was there four reserves?
I can't remember the answer.
Yeah, I can't but, remember.
I think it was, yeah. So anyway, I don't think you can go wrong, but no. I think they'd go with the big, and if they went with Sarah, then I mean she runs the floor great, can pressure the X, she can, you know, bang bodies, and the big thing they're going to have to really hone in on is making up on those boards, both defensively but offensively as well. Make sure they're not one shot wonders, you know.
I don't know if you can really answer this, but it's something that's curious with me. Obviously, in the last few days, we've heard obviously that Lisa's gone, and we're talking about that, and it's a mental health thing, which obviously we're very concerned. Andrew Bogut's come out and been very vocal about what his thoughts are. My only question I've got, and I don't know if you, like I said, you can answer this, if why didn't Basketball Australia know and realise this was going to happen instead of 2 days out saying, see you later, and putting this team in a predicament? Wouldn't have they known this prior?
Well, they would if it was happening.
Yeah, because it sort of unfolded, didn't it? It just unfolded.
Well, I'm saying, didn't she sit out of the WNBA All-Star game to be ready for the Opals?
Yes.
You want to get injured? So
yep.
How's BA meant to know that? Like, you yep. know, like, so, yeah. I mean, look, there's lots there. I'd rather not talk about
no.
What, you know, what is and what, but I'm happy, you know, like, go the Opals to Tokyo.
That's so the thing.
Let me change. Where do you think they'll finish, Timsy? You know that they're a good team. They are capable of it. Where do you think they can go with this? A medal, definitely?
Yep.
Not definitely, but if they, let me rephrase it. If they can produce what they showed us against the USA in throughout Tokyo, definitely a medal. Definitely a medal. But I hope they can continue that. I hope it wasn't, because those girls were emotionally, they yeah. were running on yeah. fumes. You yeah. know, they had a point to prove, and they were running on fumes. And you know, I just hope that's the starting place for them, and it's onward and upward, you know. And I don't see why not, because that brand of basketball was just fabulous. It was so much fun, and you know, you looked at the Boomers and the Opals, their styles were very similar, to be honest.
Yep.
You know.
Right. We needed you in commentary. We needed you in commentary because, gee, those American commentators, they just didn't even notice. They were just so busy blowing their own bags about their team and how good it is, and Dawn Staley this and Lisa Leslie that and all that sort of stuff. They're just blowing their bags, and we're coming from 16 down and we're taking over. And it's only an exhibition. Then we go to that particular. Yeah. And then they're officiating in the last 3 minutes. I was tearing my hair out. So bad.
I know. And that went a lot. No one mentioned that, you know. Like, they definitely didn't go. Well, even when they replayed and said it was out and it wasn't, you know, like.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that control the controllables, can't control that. But I did think Sandy Bondello outcoached Staley.
Yeah.
I thought she did a really good job and adjusting on the fly, and the girls were terrific. But what's interesting for me is who's going to be there? Like, what is this Opals team going to look like at the Olympics? Like, I'm so excited to see who's going to continue to step up and who's going to make a name for themselves, and is somebody going to be the go-to player, or is that going to be their secret weapon? No one's the go-to, you know. Like,
yep.
It's going to be really exciting watching this team, see which way they go once they're there. And like you said, it's not going to be, you know, this is a tough pool.
Yeah.
You know, the whole draw is does my head in a little bit. You know, three pools of four, and then the top two go through, and then the 2 second best, and I've been trying to look on FIBA, and maybe you guys know this. How do they decide who the second, third?
I don't know how they're going to decide that, but they're not going to make it clear as to who's playing who until we get to that point. So that you know that there's been that accusation in the past that some teams will perhaps not put their best foot forward, hoping to lose a game and maybe avoid a crossover against this team or that team.
Yeah,
so that can't happen. So next phase, we don't know who they potentially could play. But if they finish top of the group, then the likelihood would be they'd be against a third place finisher.
Yeah, and that's what excites me so much about this team is when you take out a superstar like you, you know, there's Michelle, you won, and Lauren was one, and now you take out Liz, it does give these other players the opportunity, and who's going to be that name that's going to step up. And that's what excites me so much, because you've just got a crew now, and that's also a sign of a very good coach. When they play like that with all that adversity, you know that coach has got them up running. I'm so looking forward to watching them. I really am.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to seeing the outcome. And you know what? Even if they don't medal, I'm excited about this group. You know,
I'm
excited about the way we look without Liz. And you know, because let's be honest, she kind of polarized. You know, not only the players, but the support, the spectators. And I think for me, and you know, if you had a look across Facebook and all the chats that was going on, it was the legacy that so many before had sort of, you know, the culture that had been built over a long period of time, that unfortunately through Liz's behaviour that was getting crushed, and people were like, well, we don't want to support the Opals, you know, when it comes, who cares, you know, but I think this is a new beginning for the team, you know, and I think that they'll find they'll have a heck of a lot of support and admiration and respect for going out there and rolling their sleeves up and trying to get this thing done.
All right, Michelle, we've reached that point in the show where we start throwing names at you, and you can give us a one-word response or a one-sentence response or an anecdote, any one of the three, and we'll just throw names at you, and it'll only be about half a dozen, so I'll kick it off. Brian Gorgian.
Absolutely. Just one sentence. To me, him and Tom, the best coaches Australia's had. I love the man.
Yep.
Fantastic. Love that. Well, I'm going to go to the next one. Tom Maher.
Well, ditto. May I repeat? Best coach I've ever had. One of the best coaches. You know, him and Brian, I feel like I'm just going to repeat myself. But just an absolute, you know, Tom's a, what is he? He's a,
they're the masters. They're the doyens. Yeah.
Ones. Yeah, genius. Yep.
All right, this one will take you away from that. Ezzy Magbegor.
Future's bright.
Yeah, sure is.
Yeah, nice one. You did mention this name as we were just talking, Trish Fallon.
Oh, she could have suited up these Olympics.
she was sitting good, over there.
Us oldies were having a bit of a joke back here going, just give Fallon the bodysuit. Let her roll out there, you know. But, well, what an athlete. She was, to me, I think she was that new wave of that athletic body, you know, back in Oz 94.
Yes.
She's that new age athlete that started to come through.
Yep. Okay, I've had Robin Maher, but we've already spoken about Robin earlier, so I've changed that one to one of my favourite players that played with you, Gaylene McKay, who I never thought got enough credit.
Oh, great defensive player.
Yep.
And I say this, far out, brushes sprout. But this girl, she never swore. she had a carrot for everything, you know. She was great to play with at Nutter Wadding, I tell you.
I was a huge fan of hers. If I could have recruited somebody as a coach, she was the type of player I really liked. She just went to work every game.
Every day.
Another name for you, Lauren Jackson.
Legacy, just superstar, best player Australia's ever had.
Yep.
Ever.
Yep. And that's that's not even gender specific.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
She's the best player, period.
Timsy, when Boddy and I sat down and we said we're going to, you know, start interviewing people, I can honestly say you were one of the first that we mentioned, and it's so great to have you on. I'm sorry that we sort of have to stop this, but we'd love to get you back because we didn't even touch the surface on NBL careers and what you think the NBL is like now. So with your permission, we'd love to have you back and discuss more, but we can't thank you enough for coming on here, and what perfect timing after a great win on the weekend and the Olympics coming up.
No, thanks for having me. It was definitely on my bucket list to be on the show.
Okay, well,
pick that one up now.
Yeah, we hope we didn't disappoint you.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay.
Right.
See you guys.
Timsy, thank you so much. All the best. Boddy, is there a more down-to-earth person than Michelle Timms? Like, this lady has done it all. But what do you say when the singlet's retired? Oh, I didn't think I deserved it. Of course she deserved it. Yeah, like, just such a legend, eh?
Oh, no, the moment I laid eyes on her in 84, I've been in love with her all that time, you know, just as a player, as a person. She's just a fantastic human being. And any opportunity to talk to her, I'll seize that. Don't you worry, because she's just a great of the game. Now,
couldn't agree more.
Talking about greats of the game, what about our boomers? What do you think? What are you thinking now? I mean, with the Argentina win was good. USA was fantastic. Nigeria, what do you take away from the Nigeria game?
Nothing. Right. What I take from the Nigeria game is that you had a team that absolutely pumped, beat the US and then thought, excuse the language, our crap don't stink, right? Yeah. And I was interested to see Mike Brown, who's the coach of Nigeria, in that first quarter, get interviewed. And what did he literally say? Yeah, we'll get our hands, we'll get our handed to us. And then I can go back and watch the videotape and say, right, you can't win unless you do that. And we did speak. They hit 23 threes, right? Gorgian, renowned for his D, they couldn't get anything going. So I do take, what do I take from it? Great for Australian basketball. Great the defense. Love the energy. Half our team was sitting down and we still won by 50. Yeah, don't take a lot.
No, I wouldn't either. But what I did take from it was the defense. Yeah, the way we scrambled and hustled and rotated, it was so good to watch. You know, we're talking with Michelle about the Opals being good to watch in the way they beat the USA. Well, so are the Boomers at the moment. They're so much better, I've got to be honest, than I anticipated. But then I didn't really know what to expect of Matisse Thybulle or from Duop Reith, or I really didn't have a clue at what to expect from them. And then also with the Opals, I thought they made a couple of selection errors, conservative errors. But, you know, they look pretty good as a group.
No, I'm very excited as we go in to talk of the Opals. You know, that would have been a bombshell that hit that team with what went on. And for them to bounce back and play and see these young kids do what they've got to do, pride in that singlet, like just brilliant, like fun to watch. And, you know, that someone that obviously watches women basketball and love the Opals and always have, but you are going to get people that are outside that bubble that are going to say, man, I've got to watch this team. This is phenomenal. And they will.
Yeah. I mean, Ezzie Magbegor is just mesmerizing the way she's playing.
What a star. What a star. And getting back to the Boomers, look, I did expect Matisse to have that defensive impact. I didn't expect so much on the impact of the offensive side. And what I mean by that is his steals, he's running the lanes. Like, I expected him to be a lockdown defender, but it's how he's getting his deflections and the steals and the turnovers that he's causing. That's what was huge to me. And, you know, I really like what I'm seeing for them. And Reith's a great fit. Nick Kay, really nice, fits in what he's got to do. And, yeah, and Golding, well, wow. I mean, that was just... Yeah,
I like the fact that they hung on to Josh Giddey and Xavier Cooks. Yeah. And so, therefore, when they take four out, they had 14, they could still field a team of 10 against Nigeria. And those guys get a look. That's how you want to blood people. That's how you want to make them part of the culture. If they're not good enough to make the 12, right? That's my proviso. If you think he's good enough, Josh Giddey, to be in the 12, okay, that's a different conversation. But to take him because, oh, he'll get some experience, that doesn't wash for me. You're going to get, trying to win a medal, get your experience at a World Cup or an Asia Cup.
And I'm with you. And you and I both had the agreement on this about the fact of Josh Giddey, should he be going to the Olympics? And we both said the same thing. If he's good enough, pick him. Yeah. We have him in the top 12. Now, not saying that anything against Josh Giddey,
but
to have him around that team, I agree with you. That's the best thing they can do. We didn't sit here saying, cut the kid and leave him alone. So I agree with that. So
what did surprise me, Brad, though, that he was in the rotation against Nigeria before Josh Green was.
Yeah, Josh Green is in the team. An interesting one, isn't it? I'm not sure where he fits in into this team. I'm not, because you've got Sobey that will play that backup role to Paddy and Deli, right? You've got Golding that's just going to be, and you said it perfectly on Lark Sweet's show. He's going to be a game by game process. Like, where do I fit him in? And he's just going to give us that lift when we need it. Nick Kay, Reith, they all fit in. I'm not, and Matisse is a, I'm not sure where he fits in. Good enough to be there. I'm not suggesting that. Yeah. Just not sure where it's going to be. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, exactly the same. And that was the first time I'd seen him in action with the Australian team. And I sort of thought, wow, he's sort of come in as – he came – I think he was a 10th man in. I think maybe even Xavier Cooks might have been in before him. So I was a little surprised at that. So
how good did Josh – speaking of that, though, how good did Josh Giddey look? Like, he looked really comfortable. Just being so tall, and this is, you know, as a 5'11" point guard, you – to be able to be that...
You're a Collingwood six-footer, mate.
Yeah, exactly. But to be able to do that, that's what, you know, some people don't realize when you're that tall, you can dribble, and obviously you've got your head up and you can see over your defender. You're not just seeing through your defender, you're seeing over. So you look at these passes that he throws, he's left-handed from one side of the court like a gridiron pass to the other side of the court. That's because he's so tall. He can see the court so well. Not that others can't, but that's why there'll be NBA guys frothing for him. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, that's what we want to end the show on, NBA guys frothing.
I don't know really how to send it, mate, but I'll just go with it. But look, I just want to say thank you to all our listeners. Thank you to our sponsors, buddy.
Yep, Burger Boss, best burger in Adelaide, in South Australia. Get to South Australia, get down to Marion Road. Their stuff is terrific and well-priced.
Absolutely. To Piranha Media, thanks for having us on. To Michelle Timms again, thank you for joining us. To everyone else, stay tuned. Next week, we'll be talking everything about the Boomers and about the Opals. Man, I really, really hope this COVID thing doesn't hit anything in there and causes any problems. Please stay away. But to everyone, body, have a great week, mate. Thanks. And we'll see you soon.
Ciao. So, Brad, I remember last week you were saying you're worried that the Boomers won't have sufficient offense to back up Paddy Mills if he's having a bad night. Well, what do you think of Chris Gordon's game against Nigeria? What was that, 7-7-3?
I'm watching that Nigeria game and Paddy Mills sitting on the sideline. I'm thinking, body has just got the biggest smile on his face going, I cannot wait to talk to Brad. Man, I'm going to put some points on the board.